प्रचंडेन्द्रिय सारथि ज्ञान वैराग्य रहितस् त्रिदंडम उपजीवति यस्त्वसंयत षड्वर्गः प्रचंडेन्द्रिय सारथि ज्ञान वैराग्य रहितस् त्रिदंडम उपजीवति यस्त्वसंयत षड्वर्गः प्रचंडेन्द्रिय सारथि ज्ञान वैराग्य रहितस् त्रिदंडम उपजीवति यस्त्व संयत षड्वर्गः चंडेन्द्रिय सारथिः ज्ञान वैराग्य रहितस् त्रिदंडम उपजीवति माता जी। यह वन हु टू बट असंयता हैविंग नॉट कंट्रोल्ड षट द सिक्स वर्ग आइटम्स ऑफ कंटैमिनेशन प्रचंड फियर्स इंद्रिया ऑफ द सेंसेस सारथि द ड्राइवर इंटेलिजेंस Jnana of knowledge, Vairagya and detachment, Rahitaha, bereft, Tridandam, the sannyas order of life, Upajivati, utilizing for one's bodily maintenance. There is text 41 also. Suranatmanam atmastham nihunute mamcha dharmaha avipakva kashayosmat amushmacha vihiyate. Translation. One who has not controlled the six forms of illusion, lust, anger, greed, excitement, false pride and intoxication, whose intelligence, the leader of the senses, is extremely attached to material things, who is bereft of knowledge and detachment, who adopts the sannyas order of life to make a living, who denies the worshipable demigods, his own self and the Supreme Lord within himself, thus ruining all religious principles, and who is still infected by material contamination, is deviated and lost both in this life and the next. Purport. Lord Krishna here condemns bogus personalities who adopt the sannyas order of life for sense gratification while still maintaining all of the symptoms of gross illusion. A false show of sannyas is never accepted by intelligent followers of Vedic principles. So-called sannyasis who ruin all Vedic religious principles sometimes become famous among foolish persons, but they are simply cheating themselves and their followers. These charlatan sannyasis are never actually engaged in the loving devotional service of Lord Krishna. Om Ajnanadimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutam Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatanvitam Tvam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvidamsha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Shri Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Shri Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminidhi Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. Translation once again. One who has not controlled the six forms of illusion, lust, anger, greed, excitement, false pride and intoxication, whose intelligence, the leader of the senses, is extremely attached to material things, who is bereft of knowledge and detachment, who adopts the sannyas order of life to make a living, who denies the worshipable demigods, his own self, and the Supreme Lord within himself, thus ruining all religious principles, and who is still infected by material contamination, is deviated and lost, both in this life and the next. So basically, Krishna, in this particular verses, he is condemning bogus sannyasis. People who profess to be religious, but who are not actually following the principles of religion. Why do the scriptures and why does the Supreme Lord himself kind of condemn such personalities very strongly? Because the leaders of spirituality, the leaders of religion, are the people who are responsible for either building or breaking the trust of people in the path of spirituality and religion. Now, if you think about it, trust is like a bridge that connects the domain of rational empiricism to the domain of faith. And on the spiritual journey, it's an important bridge that has to be crossed, wherein we stop relying upon our senses and our intelligence, and start relying on what the scriptures have to say. We have to make that transition to make substantial spiritual advancement. So trust is that important bridge that needs to be crossed. Or in other words, trust is that bridge that connects the head to the heart. For us to make that transition from the head to the heart, we have to cross this bridge of trust. And this bridge is very fragile. It takes a lot of effort to build it, but to break it takes no time. And how does this bridge get built? It gets built when we see the good behavior of the sadhus. And it gets broken when we see the misbehavior of the sadhus. It might have taken a long time to build this bridge by seeing the good behavior of so many sadhus. But when we come across the misbehavior even of a single sadhu, this bridge is broken. Trust is extremely fragile. There is a story of a sage who was visiting a village. And this village just consisted of 10 families. So this sage, he brought a magical pot to the village. And he placed that pot in the center of the village. It was like a hundi. And he said that, you know, you villagers, you put money into this pot throughout the day. And at the end of the day, by 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening, whatever money gets collected in this particular pot, after 5 or 6 o'clock, it gets multiplied 5 times. It will get multiplied 5 times provided the money that gets multiplied is equally divided amongst the villagers. So whatever money comes into the pot, throughout the day it gets multiplied 5 times, but then the entire money which has multiplied 5 times has to be equally divided amongst the villagers. Now each of these families, they were earning, you know, 10 rupees per day, all of them. So people started thinking, who will risk their 10 rupees? In the sense that, suppose one family puts 10 rupees in the hundi. After 6 o'clock, it will become 50 rupees. But that 50 rupees will be divided equally amongst all the families. So each family will get 5 rupees. So you give 10 rupees and you get 5 rupees in return. So who will be ready to put their money now? So then all the villagers, they decided, let's make a deal that every day all of us will put all our 10 rupees. Then what will happen? We will have 100 rupees in the pot by 5 o'clock in the evening. And by 6 o'clock, we will have 500 rupees. And then when it is equally divided amongst all the villagers, everyone will get 50 rupees each. So 10 rupees to 50 rupees. So that was the, you know, the pact, the agreement amongst all the villagers. Now, they didn't have an extra security guard there to ensure that every single person in the village, every single family is contributing 10 rupees. It was based on trust. So time passed in this way, and all the villagers were becoming more and more prosperous. So they are putting their 10 rupees every single day, and in the evening, every one of them was getting 50 rupees each. It was based on trust. But then one day, one of the 10 gets a brilliant idea. So he thinks that, you know, I won't put my 10 rupees today. So what happens? He has his 10 rupees in his pocket. The other 9 people put their 10 rupees each. So how much money is in the hundi at 5 o'clock in the evening? 90 rupees. So it gets multiplied 5 times. How much does it become? 450 rupees. So that 450 rupees gets equally divided amongst the 10 families. So how much does each family get? 45 rupees. But this one guy who decided not to put his 10 rupees, he gets how much? 45 plus 10. 55 rupees. So he makes a profit. He gets 55 rupees. Everyone else gets 45 rupees. Next day, what happens? Nobody puts any money in the hundi because the trust is broken. Because everyone starts thinking that maybe everyone will default today. And if everyone defaults, then I'm going to lose my 5 rupees. Who wants to take that risk? See, just see, things go on very smoothly, but one person breaks the trust. And trust is so fragile that it breaks into pieces in no time. And now to build back the same trust is not easy anymore. It's not that one person starts contributing and then everyone starts contributing the next day. It doesn't happen that way. The reverse is no longer true. But one person breaks the trust and then immediately the entire trust is lost. So trust, and if you see, in the modern day world, that is what is happening, and that is why paying your income tax is something like putting your money in the hundi, right? It's like the money gets used for public welfare. So because there is no trust that income tax that you are paying will be utilized properly, people are extremely reluctant to give taxes to the government nowadays. But in the olden days, people had so much of trust in the king that they would readily pay the taxes. Nowadays, everyone is very busy trying to save taxes. So trust is extremely fragile. And because the sadhus, and in this particular verses, the discussions about the sannyasis are not just the leaders of all the ashrams, but they are the leaders of the entire varnashram system. They are the leaders of the entire society. So they have to be extremely trustworthy. Unless they are trustworthy, it is very difficult for people to build their trust. in the process of spirituality, in the process of religion. So it's a great responsibility on the heads of the sadhus, on the heads of the members of any spiritual institution for that matter. The responsibility of you and me, because we are part of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And the beautiful thing is, if we take this responsibility seriously, it's a very fast way of making spiritual advancement. When I was getting initiated many years ago, I got initiated on Ram Navami. So Radhanath Swami Maharaj, my spiritual master, he was giving the initiation lecture. And because it was Ram Navami, he was speaking about the pastimes of Lord Ramchandra. And he said that Lord Ramchandra, he was ready to take so much of hardships. He was ready to go to the forest for 14 years just to protect the good name of the Raghu dynasty. Just to protect the good name of his father. Because the Raghu dynasty, the Raghu Vamsha, the kings of the Raghu Vamsha were known for keeping their vows, following their vows strictly. And he wanted to safeguard the reputation of the Raghu dynasty. And he said that all of you people who are getting initiated today, being a disciple, being disciples of this parampara, we should learn from the example of Lord Ramchandra. And he made a very nice statement. He said that if you take this responsibility, that as a disciple, it's your responsibility to safeguard the good name of the parampara, the good name of Krishna in this world, in the sense that we properly represent Krishna, we properly represent the parampara in this world. If you are simply conscious of this great responsibility, it's a safe way to go back home, back to Godhead. If you simply take this responsibility very seriously, always be conscious that I am representing Krishna, I am representing the parampara. The way I behave, what I speak, everything represents the parampara, represents Krishna. And the way I behave, the way I talk, is going to have an impact in people's life. That will decide whether people will take their next step towards spirituality or they will hesitate to take that next step. And if you see, the great devotees of the Lord, they are always conscious of this great responsibility. Krishna consciousness means always conscious of Krishna and always conscious that we are representatives of Krishna within this world. Representatives of the parampara within this world. Always conscious of that. And this consciousness is the hallmark of the great devotees. For example, our Radha Gopinath Prabhu, he often tells this, he happily tells this story many times. Many years ago, many decades ago, he used to kind of go for preaching programs with Bhakti Rasamrita Swami, who was at that time Devamrita Prabhu. And they used to travel by local train to go for the program. And one particular day, Radha Gopinath Prabhu, he had conjunctivitis, infection in the eyes. And when we have conjunctivitis, we wear goggles, right? Because it doesn't spread to others. We wear goggles. So he was wearing goggles while traveling in local train. You can just imagine, Radha Gopinath Prabhu, he has voice of Amitabh Bachchan, he has the height of Amitabh Bachchan, and back then he was very young also, and if he's wearing goggles, it would look like Amitabh Bachchan wearing dress of a sadhu, something like that. So he was, Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj, at that time Devamrita Prabhu was traveling with Radha Gopinath Prabhu, and At every station, local trains, many people get down, many people get into the trains also. And every station, Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj used to ask Radha Gopinath Prabhu, show me your eyes, so that Gopinath Prabhu would, you know, remove his goggles and show his eyes. So Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj wanted to ensure that all the passengers, all the new passengers who had boarded the train in that particular station, understood why Gopinath Prabhu is wearing his goggles. It's not for fashion, but for conjunctivitis. Otherwise, people will think, you know, aajkal sadhu log bhi goggles pehenne lag gaye. Ghor Kali Yuga aa gaya ye to. Abhi to, we can't put faith on sadhus anymore. You know, people will lose their faith, and Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj was extremely conscious and cautious of that. So he used to do that. So that is the hallmark of the great devotees of the Lord. And they are not just conscious themselves, they try to make you conscious of that also. For example, you know, maybe 12, 13, 14 years ago, during winter, November or December, our temple hall was going through some renovations. So every morning, we used to have a morning program at Bhaktivedanta Hall. And then all of us used to sit together for chanting in the porch, in front of the Bhaktivedanta Hall. And it was few years during that period, the winter was really severe in Bombay. Nowadays, winters are as good as summer. There are cool summers. But during those years, the winters were really winters. They were quite cool. And I used to sit there, and I was like relatively new in the ashram. So I was more enthusiastic about my japa. So I used to chant very seriously, and my whole body used to shake while chanting Hare Krishna. And I used to chant Hare Krishna very fast and trying to chant with more intensity. And despite the cold, during the chanting, I used to sweat like anything. And my whole kurta used to get wet, literally wet. It used to be like, you know, I just ran a marathon, something like that. It used to get wet totally. And I used to feel nice about it, okay? I did something, you know, some hard work for chanting Hare Krishna. So, this went on for a few days. So, one day when I was chanting, you know, Maharaj called me. He said, please come here. And as he was speaking, I could see that he was very angry, but he was trying to control his anger, transcendental anger. So he said, this looks crazy. And then he said, I don't remember the exact words, but I distinctly remember the message and his mood. The words, they skip my mind. And he effectively said that, you know, when people look at you, they'll get a wrong understanding, they'll get a wrong impression of what this Hare Krishna chanting is all about. You know, it doesn't look right, it doesn't create a good impression amongst the new people who are seeing this particular process for the first time. That is what he effectively said. And then towards the end of his chastisement, he pointed towards another devotee and said that you should chant like him. So I looked at that devotee, and that devotee was having the bead bag in his hand and he was sleeping. So what Maharaj effectively said that from the perspective of your responsibility as a sadhu, his chanting is having a better impression on people than yours. And it's a fact, right? When a new person sees a devotee, you know, sleeping while chanting, they think that you're going into trance. You know, I remember when I was a new bhakta, and I was chanting Hare Krishna, I was invited by devotees, you know, please come and chant with us. So I went and I was chanting and I saw one of the devotees, he was a leader. And in between he was going like this. So I thought, wow, he's going to trance in between the chanting, I was thinking. And only later I came to know that. But initially, it leaves a good impression with you. You feel that they're going into trance. And you know, a few months ago I saw because of Sankirtan Prabhu's endeavors, a lot of foreigners visit the temple during the, especially the winter season. A lot of tourists, they come, newcomers. And one day I was seeing that one of our devotees, he was sitting on the sofa there. And while chanting Hare Krishna, he had gone into trance, you know, for a prolonged period of time. And I saw a tourist with a very sophisticated camera. He was taking photographs of him from different angles of vision, you know, different angles he was taking the photograph, thinking that this sadhu has gone into some kind of trance. Some rare moments he was trying to capture. And I was thinking, you know, what's happening? So from that perspective, Maharaj was right. That, you know, that is better because you are not at least leaving a bad impression on new people. So we should be extremely conscious that we represent the parampara. We represent the Supreme Lord in this world. Another instance is, you know, at Varanasi. At Varanasi, there was like a, something like an interfaith conference, not exactly an interfaith conference, some kind of a conference where the Buddhists were there, people of different faiths were there, and Maharaj was also there presenting Vaishnavism. Actually, in a perspective, environmental perspectives of Vaishnavism and of different faiths. So after Maharaj spoke, there are so many others who are speaking. The Buddhists were speaking and people of different faiths were speaking. And when they were speaking, I was thinking, you know, what the hell is going on, in the sense that they were so boring and it didn't make sense. So I was sitting at the back and I was quietly, you know, reading Prabhupada's books on my Kindle. Sitting at the back. So once the conference was over, everything dispersed. And Radhanath Swami Maharaj, he was like meeting different people who had come to attend the conference. And then towards the end, he came towards me. And he asked me. Again, I could sense that he was angry and he was trying to suppress his anger. And he said, "What are you doing here?" So I thought, you know, I go with Maharaj so that, you know, I can make a report of the event and upload it on the website. And why is Maharaj asking me, you know, what are you doing here? And then he went away. I thought, I have come here for my services, for my duty. And why is he asking me this question? What are you doing here? So because I felt that, you know, he was trying to tell me that you're not supposed to be here, but you're here, something like that. I got a little confused. But later on, I came to know that actually what he was trying to actually say was, what are you doing here? By asking that question, what he actually wanted to convey was, you're not behaving properly here. You're not behaving the way you're supposed to behave. Because you're attending a conference, no matter who is speaking, you should at least act as if you're attentively hearing. Because everyone is watching you. Everybody knows that you're representing ISKCON. So you're leaving an impression in their minds. They'll feel that these people, they are fanatical people, they're in their own world. Only when their guru speaks, they listen. And when others are speaking, they shut themselves off. So that is the impression that you are going to leave. So you should behave properly. That is what he was trying to convey. So the great devotees of the Lord, they're very conscious of this very fact that we represent Krishna and we represent parampara in this world, and it's a very great responsibility. And the beautiful thing is, being conscious of this responsibility is the hallmark of the great devotees, and to become conscious of this responsibility is also the method to make rapid spiritual advancement. If you only become conscious, try to become conscious of our behavior. And preaching is like putting yourselves voluntarily under scrutiny, or under people's scrutiny. When we start preaching, we are allowing people to see us. We are exposing ourselves in front of people. And we are forced to become more responsible in our behavior. We are forced to become more responsible in our practices. So that is why, you know, we might have often heard this phrase that the method to make fast spiritual advancement is to take up responsibilities in the mission of the Lord. Because when we take up responsibility in the preaching mission, we come under scrutiny. We become conscious of our behavior. We become conscious of our spiritual practices all the more. And we are pushed towards more and more spiritual advancement. And we see Prabhupada's purports across the Bhaktivedanta purports, both in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada repeatedly emphasizes what's our responsibility as members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Various places. A few things. In the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in one particular purport, Srila Prabhupada makes this statement. He says, therefore, in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, those who are twice initiated so as to become Brahmanas must bear in mind their great responsibility to be truthful, control the mind and senses, be tolerant, and so on. Then their life will be successful. And in the 6th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the episode of the conversation between the Vishnudutas and the Yamadutas. And the Vishnudutas, they ask the Yamadutas, okay, you are representatives of Yamaraj, who is Dharmaraj, tell me about the principles of Dharma. Tell us about the principles of Dharma. In that particular context, Prabhupada says that if you are representing something, you should properly know their philosophy also. So similarly, the people who are in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness should be well versed in the literatures, the Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, so that when they are confronted with questions, they are able to properly answer those questions. And then in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the episode where, you know, Shivananda Sen, by giving his association to the dog, delivers the dog, in one of those purports, Prabhupada says that the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness should become so pure that they are able to deliver people who associate with them even without their knowledge. It's like the dog who associated with Shivananda Sen, the dog automatically got delivered simply by associating with Shivananda Sen. And Prabhupada says this should be the responsibility of the members of ISKCON also. That whoever associates with members of ISKCON, they get delivered automatically from the cycle of birth and death. A tall responsibility, a tall expectation from the founder Acharya. And something interesting, in one of the purports in the 3rd canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, he says that it is essential that a brahmachari engaged in spiritual advancement look very healthy and lustrous. This is for me personally, I thought. So I put it here. That a brahmachari engaged in spiritual advancement looks very healthy and lustrous. So these are responsibilities, and if we take this seriously, fast way of making spiritual advancement. Now, what makes anybody trustworthy? What makes anybody trustworthy in this world? Three things. In any field, what makes somebody trustworthy? First is competence. Second is reliability. And third is honesty. Let's take the example of the medical field, for example. We have got our Yugavatar Prabhu sitting here. So when people approach him to get some medical advice or to take treatment under him, they look for three things, right? How competent a doctor he is. He is a good doctor. From which college he has studied medical science. And how is his expertise in the field of medical science? First of all, his competence is seen. The second thing that is seen is reliability. How consistently he has performed surgeries or he has treated patients. There is another thing that is seen, reliability. And the third thing that is seen is honesty. How honest a doctor he is. And nowadays, honesty is very important, isn't it? If you're not an honest doctor, nobody will come to you. So these three things builds your trustworthiness. Competence, reliability, and honesty. And on the spiritual path, competence corresponds to purity. Right? So purity, when people see that you're pure, you're reliable. Reliable in the sense, you're consistent in your spiritual practices. And third thing, you're honest. That means you're not a hypocrite. When they see these three things in us, they develop trust in us. That's what builds our trustworthiness. Now, all three things are important. But something is more important than the others. And what is that? If you see the history of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, as a society, after Prabhupada's departure, immediately after Prabhupada's departure, we were no longer competent. In the sense that, because the society was very new, very fresh, there are not many pure devotees in the society. So the pure devotee, the shining example of our society, Prabhupada, had gone. So we had lost competence. Right? But then, after Prabhupada left, our society didn't exhibit much reliability either. In the sense, many of the leaders had difficulty being consistent with their basic spiritual practices also. So we lost on the reliability front also. We lost on the competency front. We lost on the reliability front also. But what helped the society survive? Honesty. It's to the credit of our society that hypocrisy was never tolerated. However big a leader one was, if such a person had any difficulty, you know, he was removed and he was replaced by other leaders. And just because we are honest, we survived and now we are flourishing. Because now we have got both reliability and competence both. Now there are so many pure devotees in our society and there are so many people who are consistent with their spiritual practices. So honesty, that's the last leg of trustworthiness. If that is broken, your spiritual society is gone. And if that is broken, people lose complete trust in the path of religion, complete trust in the path of spirituality. That's the last leg. And more or less, that is what is happening in the modern day society. That last leg is broken. And if you see the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the episode of Gopinath Patnaik. Now, Gopinath Patnaik didn't have purity. In the sense that, you know, that story that comes in the Antilila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He spent the king's revenue on dancing girls. Right? He was an important part in the administration of King Pratap Rudra. He was supposed to collect revenues on behalf of the government and keep some money and give the rest to the king, the designated amount. But then he kept even the money that was supposed to be given to the king and spent that money on dancing girls. And because of that, he got into trouble. And when the entire episode was over, and then what happened was, you know, he was supposed to be killed by, you know, thrown on the changa, a way of capital punishment during those days. And miraculously, at the last moment, you know, King Pratap Rudra himself intervened. He was not aware of these happenings. And at the last moment, he intervened and saved Gopinath Patnaik's life. And Gopinath Patnaik, along with his four brothers, and his, you know, father and mother, they were released. And the first thing that all of them did was, they went and met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Gopinath Patnaik got a silken turban by Maharaj Pratap Rudra, because Maharaj Pratap Rudra felt very bad that an associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was treated so badly. So he kind of respected Gopinath Patnaik with a gold, with a silken turban, and also doubled his salary. So when this happened, all of them, when they were released, they went to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And what was Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's response? You know, Gopinath Patnaik, you know, he kind of apologized in front of Mahaprabhu, and he said that, you know, I've got all this silken turban and my, you know, salary has doubled, all these things has happened, but this is not real mercy, my dear Lord. Your real mercy is what? Your real mercy you have shown to Vadinath Patnaik and Ramanand Rai, who are my brothers, because they have renounced the world, and by your mercy, they have got your special grace, because they have developed renunciation from this world. And how did Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu respond? He said that if everyone starts renouncing like them, if you start renouncing like them, then how will your family go on? You know, don't worry. Whatever money you earn, you can do whatever you want with it, as long as you don't engage in sinful activities. Don't use the king's revenue. Don't use government's revenue. Use your revenue for whatever you want to do. But don't engage in sinful activities. And he embraced all of them and sent them back home. Mahaprabhu didn't take it so seriously when he saw that Gopinath Patnaik wasn't so pure. Now, who's the example of a person who didn't show reliability in Mahaprabhu's Leela? That is Kalkrishnadas. It's Kalkrishnadas, right? Who went with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu during the South India Yatra. You know, he kind of had trouble along the way. And when all of them returned to Jagannath Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took it more seriously than he took the lapse of Gopinath Patnaik. And he kind of banished Kalkrishnadas. And when the devotees intervened, and Kalkrishnadas was given another responsibility by which he was reinstated on the position of devotional service. So Mahaprabhu took lapse in reliability more seriously. And who is the person who lapsed with honesty? It was Chota Haridas. And that was the harshest treatment that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave. That was the harshest treatment. He never forgave for one full year. And even after he committed suicide, Mahaprabhu was kind of, he felt that that was the right atonement for the mistake that he had committed, because he acted as a hypocrite. He acted dishonestly. Through his own example, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu set the example that, okay, it's fine. Lapse in purity is okay. Lapse in reliability is more serious. But lapse in honesty, that's the most serious thing. And that puts a dent on your trustworthiness more than any other thing. So as representatives of Krishna and the parampara in this world, we have to be absolutely honest, and we should try to be reliable, consistent in our spiritual practices as much as possible, and we should strive for purity. And when people see that we are doing these three things, that we are very honest about our level of spiritual advancement, we are not posing ourselves as something beyond our level of realization. We are very honest. We are not hypocrites. And people see that we are honest, not hypocrites. And when they see that we are consistent with our spiritual practices, there is reliability, and we are striving for purity as much as we can, then we become trustworthy. And people can put trust in us. And when people put trust in us, they are able to take their next step on the spiritual path. So it's not such a hard thing to do. After all, you know, purity is not considered to be the most important thing. The most important thing is honesty. More important is reliability. and should sincerely strive for purity. So it's very hope-giving, and also makes us aware of the responsibility which is on the shoulders of every one of us. Thank you very much. Granthrashmad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.